This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. Excited for today's show. Welcoming on a new guest to the pod. He's been on VSiN shows before, but never has been on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Mike Calabrese of the Action Network, Big Bets on Campus podcast. He will join the show. We hit on a bunch of things, a little bit of a disagreement, even though I would say it was like a agree to disagree moment regarding Notre Dame, but he does have a couple of plays against the Irish and a bunch of plays in the Heisman market, game of the year market, win totals, futures. We kind of run the gambit, if you will, with Mike. And a big reason why we had Mike on the show, because I'm always looking for new guests, and I know Mike and I listen to Mike's work quite a bit over at BBOC, and we've had Duck on the podcast. We've had Colin Wilson on the podcast before, but for some reason I just had Mike, I don't know, didn't have him blocked. But thankfully, we had an email come in at cfbpod@vsin.com that suggested Mike. And I said, brilliant. Why didn't I think of that before? So thank you to Kevin Whalen for chiming in and giving us that suggestion. And we had Mike on the podcast. So continue to fire away cfbpod@vsin.com, or you can put it in the comments if you want to give us a 5-star review over at iTunes, Spotify. Every episode is up on YouTube as well, youtube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. So we've got an open and a bet to get to here in just a moment, but we did also find out some game times, and we opened up the last podcast by saying, hey, week one, could you be a little bit better? But I have some good news for week one, because the two shortest spreads of week one, and now remember who we are, right? We're degens. We love to bet games at noon, but we also love to bet games way into the evening hours. And if you are a fan of late night football, well, boys and girls, week one has given you a treat, because Hawaii versus UNLV and UCLA Cal, the two shortest point spreads of week one, both sitting at 1.5 currently. UNLV, a 1.5-point favorite at Hawaii, and Cal, a 1.5-point home favorite against UCLA. Both those games will kick off after 10 o'clock Eastern. So UNLV Hawaii will be on the C-Dub, and UCLA Cal will be on ESPN. And I'm calling it right now. Stormy, if you're listening, get your bags packed. You're going to Berkeley week one. That is the Stormy special. ESPN, late night game, Bay Area, Dave Fleming, Brock Osweiler, Stormy Bonatoni, the elite trio there. They will be in Cal Berkeley. I'm calling it right now. That is my prediction. That's a hell of a game, too. You get the Bob Chesney era beginning for UCLA, JKS back at Cal, Tosh Lupoi era beginning at Cal. And then you know how much we love Hawaii here on this podcast. Now, last year, remember, Hawaii, week zero, Stanford, opened as a dog, closed as the favorite. We were able to cash that ticket, thankfully, thanks to some late game heroics slash boneheaded decisions by Stanford. I would not bet UNLV Hawaii right now. And the reason is, I think you might be able to get a little bit better of a number. Right now, Hawaii is catching 1.5. Anytime we can get Hawaii catching points, you know we're going to take it. Timmy Chang, 21-6-1 ATS since becoming the head coach of the Bows on his home turf. Both those teams play in week zero. And also, speaking of late night games, UNLV and Memphis, 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 local on Big Fox. So a great opportunity for two teams in the G5. And I think UNLV, as a slight favorite, will win that game. I'm not so confident about Hawaii going on the road to Stanford, catching 3. It's, you know, a lot of uncertainty there with the Stanford Cardinal. But I just don't love the spot. A little bit of revenge, too, from a year ago. So I would not bet Hawaii, even though I loved Hawaii last year. Will not bet it right now. But, yeah, we got game times out there. And I would say the week zero game times set up pretty well, right? We talked about it. 8 games amongst FBS teams in week zero. We've got a nooner, North Carolina TCU on ESPN. We've got a couple of games in the mid-afternoon. We've got a couple of games in the evening hours, including Hawaii Stanford ACC Network, 7 p.m. And then we've got the late night game. So all things considered, week zero, a thumbs up. Eight games spread out all across the day. Should be a good start to the college football season there on August 29th. So as we record this podcast, I am aware that the Brendan Sorsby injunction is going to be ruled on Monday, June 1st. So we don't know what is going to happen with that injunction. Could they potentially allow him a chance to play this year? It's possible. I think highly doubtful. It's pretty cut and dry. Brendan Sorsby, even though he said, I bet on my team to try to feel more connected, he bet on his own team when he was at Indiana. And I think the NCAA is really going to stick its heels down in the mud and say, you're not playing this year, as I think is accurate. I mean, for me to agree with the NCAA is hard to do, but I don't think Brendan Sorsby is going to play. So with that said, I think Texas Tech is worth a play in the futures market to win the Big 12. And I was talking to my good buddy down in Lubbock, Ryan Hyatt, and I said, I just called him and I said, I wanted to run some things by you. Am I missing anything about this Texas Tech team? Now, don't exchange me saying I like them to win the Big 12 for them to win the title. I think the Brendan Sorsby loss brings the ceiling down quite a bit. But when I look at the Big 12, and we're going to dive into the Big 12 extensively with Mike Calabrese. He's got some thoughts on Houston and Kansas State as teams to potentially look at in that 13-14-1 range to win the Big 12. But to me, when you look at the talent that's on the roster, when you look at the schedule, I actually think the market overreacted just a wee bit to the news of Sorsby being out. And this is something that Ryan Hyatt said to me was, he believes if Will Hammond doesn't get hurt last year, they don't go to the portal to get a new quarterback. Now, we'll never know. He did get hurt. They go out and they spend big money to get Brendan Sorsby from Cincinnati. But with Will Hammond coming off the ACL, we're seeing clips of Patrick Mahomes practicing already in Kansas City. Now, he's not full go. He's just kind of out there. But I think the reality is Will Hammond is going to play football pretty quickly on in this season. The reports are out there that he's ahead of schedule and all of that. And then you look at the schedule and you look for BYU, not on it. You look for Kansas State, not on it. You look for Utah, not on it. The most challenging games they have this year, Houston, week three, won't be easy, but they're at home. Now, it's a short week. They go up to Corvallis in week two. They don't have, you know, they come back, they play on a Friday night. So not ideal spot there, short week to take on Houston. Arizona State loses their quarterback in Leavitt to LSU, loses Tyson to the NFL, busy in the portal, but they get him at home. They have to go to Colorado. Colorado is the worst team in the Big 12 this year. They get West Virginia at home. Oklahoma State on the road, could that be tricky? Yeah, maybe with a unique offense, but at the end of the day, the talent on this Texas Tech roster is still there. I mean, you look at the portal haul that they brought in, top five in the country according to 247. Now, it comes with a caveat because their number one recruit was Brendan Sorsby, who was listed as a five-star transfer portal haul. So, if he's not playing, you bring down that number a little bit. But still, they were able to get a massive defensive lineman from Wake Forest. I know a number of big-name teams, including Notre Dame, were high on. They get him. They go out and get an Austin Romine from Kansas State, back-to-back second-team Big 12 performer. Does he fill the role of Jacob Rodriguez? They're going to try. Very productive guy, over 100 tackles a year ago. Look, Jacob Rodriguez was a second-round pick. He's an NFL player. He's going to be in the NFL for a long time. But they filled that role with a guy that was very productive at a high level. So you're never too worried about the talent. You know, I did Miami, Ohio's bowl game these past 2 years, and an edge rusher that they had, Adam Trick, very productive guy. They bring him in via the transfer portal. So they're a top five, maybe downgrade him to top 10 portal haul. And I just think when you look at the market, which was at around minus 140, minus 150 or so with Sorsby, I don't think it changes that much for them to win the conference if it is Will Hammond. And once again, the schedule plays massively into all of this. They're going to be a favorite in every single game. They're going to be a double-digit favorite, probably in every single game. Maybe the Houston game, but they're at home. So maybe that's a spot we back Houston as an underdog, and we'll hear more about the Houston Cougars in a little bit with Calabrese. But Abilene Christian, Oregon State on the road, Houston, Sam Houston, Colorado, Arizona State at home, Cincinnati might be one of the worst teams in the Big 12 as well. They're on the road. Arizona, Noah Fafita's back. Decent team, but you get them at home. West Virginia, you don't have that weird travel to West Virginia. You get them at home. At Oklahoma State, at Baylor, home to TCU on Thanksgiving. They could lose a game and still make the Big 12 championship. And if they make that Big 12 championship, and we've got an even money ticket, which is out there at FanDuel and DraftKings, they're going to be a favorite in Arlington. And if you feel the need to get off of it, maybe you try to middle it. And also, lastly, Will Hammond should be more than 100% by the time the Big 12 championship rolls around. So I'm going to log it. I bet it myself. Texas Tech to win the Big 12, even money. I did have one pro bettor. I texted him and said, am I missing anything here? He said, nope, I've made that bet myself. One of the biggest positions that he has this year. So that's worth noting as well. All right, let's take a quick break. Speaking of the Big 12, Mike Calabrese of the Action Network will join us on the other side of the break, and he will break down Houston, Kansas State. He's got some thoughts on them. Are they teams to look at to maybe knock off the Red Raiders in Arlington in early December? It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. And we're back on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. A new guest to the show. I don't want to say new guest to VSiN, but a new guest to this pod. Has his own podcast, part of the Big Bets on Campus podcast empire. And we've had many of those gentlemen on this podcast. But I'm going to do my best Carson Daly for our next guest, because we always are asking for suggestions of guests. And I'm glad that this came into the inbox at CFBpod@vsin.com. Kevin Whalen said, I would love to hear from Mike Calabrese. And I said, of course, I would like to hear from Mike Calabrese as well. So he joins us on the program. Mr. Calabrese, you are a wanted man, and appreciate you coming on the pod.
See, I appreciate this kind of love in the offseason, because I'll talk to anybody. I'll talk to the guys at the Wawa deli counter, and they're like, we don't want to talk about Northern Illinois, you know, win totals at this point. So at least I'm in a safe place. I'm in a place that I'm respected, at least, you know, given a stage. You can cut me down afterwards if I don't bring the right kind of insight here, but at least we're in an environment where we're past the halfway mark of the college football offseason. We're moving ever so closer to, you know, fall camp and media days, talking season, as Steve Spurrier used to refer to it as. Like, I'm excited to start talking about things as we lead up to the season and the bullets start flying for real.
Look, we had game times announced earlier last week, and I was like a kid in the candy store. Who's going to be the late night games? Let's structure our schedules. That is true nerdery for college football. And we get bowl games, the dates to bowl games next this upcoming week. So get excited. But no, I'm pumped to have you on. Obviously, we've had your partner in crime, Duck, on the podcast a couple of times. We've had Colin Wilson on. So excited to have you on. And sometimes you just overlook good guests and appreciate the email. So Mike, obviously, I respect him quite a bit. Big Bets on Campus, Action Network, also New York Post. So he's got all sorts of gambling fodder out there. College baseball as well as Super Regionals, College World Series before we know it. So a really important guy to talk to. But this is a football pod, and that's what you love. That's what I love. So let's jump into it. And we're going to bounce around a little bit. I do want to get some thoughts on the Group of Five, because you and Duck during the regular season do an awesome job breaking that down. But let's talk about a guy who used to be in the Group of Five, now is in the Power Four, and that's Willie Fritz, the head coach of Houston. I heard your breakdown of Houston. This is a team, and I opened the podcast talking about the Big 12, and we're going to dive into the Big 12, because with the Sorsby uncertainty, we're recording this before we knew about the injunction, but it certainly seems like Sorsby's not going to play this year. Let's look at Houston. Their win total right now at DraftKings, 7.5, juiced way over, minus $1.85. If you want to get a little frisky, 8.5 plus 130 to the over. And Mike, I think that's the way you're looking. You think Willie Fritz in this year with Connor Wegman returning, this is a team that could maybe make some noise in the Big 12.
Well, let's just look at their, you know, performance, at least as it relates to Fritz over the last 4 years. His win total over, 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 over by an average of 2.25 wins. And this is a guy who's won every single place that he's been. He won two national titles at the JUCO level at Blinn, the same school that Cam Newton elevated to a national championship. He did big things at Central Missouri at the D2 level, back-to-back national title game appearances at Sam Houston. And then he goes to Georgia Southern, helps them in their transition up to the FBS, goes 17-7 there before going to Tulane. And I know in recent years, Tulane has been a program that's always been vying for that G5, soon to be G6 bid, but they were more or less just a road bump down in the South. And I think what's interesting is taking them to a place where they're playing in the Cotton Bowl and beating a Heisman Trophy winner and getting themselves into the top 10 for just the second time since World War II. Those are things that you can't overlook in terms of someone really being a program builder, not just someone who gets a big fat check from his boosters and opens up that NIL war chest. But what's interesting is Houston is now starting to do a little bit of that. And you saw the incremental growth last year on the offensive side of the ball. I think there's a chance that they could punch through, not just over this number. You can get just north of 3-1 for them to hit 10 regular season wins. And you brought up the big point, which is there's three difficult road games on this schedule. One of them is early on at Texas Tech on a Friday night. Big boosters like Cody Campbell were furious that they're playing those games on short rest because of the TV implications. They want to get the national stage and everything else. This is a bit of an advantage for a Houston team, even though they're going on the road to Lubbock, a very difficult place to play, because will Hammond even be back from his knee injury? And if they're down to their third string quarterback in a spot like that, Texas Tech is just trying to survive, get to full health, and then play their best football in October and November moving forward. So if there was an opportunity to nip the best team from a holistic roster perspective in the Big 12, that's the time when you want to catch the Red Raiders.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And, you know, one thing, you know, I was joking, we had David Hale on the podcast last week breaking down the quarterbacks, and I joked that I was, you know, learning new things about where certain players were. Malachi Nelson being at Syracuse. Had no idea that Malachi Nelson had reemerged at Syracuse, but I was aware, but I kind of forgot about it. Mekhi Hughes, and you brought this up on your pod, he is back with Willie Fritz, and he had so much success with Willie down at Tulane, got the big money to go to Oregon, and for whatever reason, just never clicked there. He had 17 total carries. I think he is a massive opportunity to really strike large this year, and has really, I would say, flown under the radar as a big-time transfer portal guy.
Yeah, this almost feels like the transfers of yesteryear where you had to sit a year out and then people forgot about you and then you came back with a vengeance. No wear and tear on his tires from his time in Eugene. His bank account's looking a lot better. So hopefully he still has that fire in his belly to play hard, because if he does, this system at Tulane treated him well. Now it's a similar system here at Houston. And really, I think if the offensive line in front of him can put something together from all their moving pieces in the transfer portal, because last year, despite an upgrade offensively, they were 126 per PFF in pass blocking, 74th in run blocking. So they bring in 4 3-star transfer options along the line to pair with Mackenzie Agnello, who didn't allow a single sack and 368 dropbacks as their center. So it's just so difficult. And Duck and I talked about this on the BBOC podcast. You can start to extrapolate stats from a G6 program, even an FCS program. If you're a receiver, if you're a running back, sometimes those spots far away from the football, even a cornerback on the defensive side of the ball. But offensive line, it's not just how big you are, how many bench press reps you can put up. It's how you play and also how you play with the guy next to you. And I think that's what's the kind of the mystery box for this Houston team, because if this offensive line pops, they have weapons. They have Amari Thomas. They got Trent Walker in the transfer portal, who's going to be a great security blanket. He had over 40 chain-moving catches last year for Oregon State. That's perfect as a possession receiver. So I really think this offense, the sky is the limit. They could finish top 3 in the Big 12 if this offensive line comes together. But I think it's worth a gamble. And as I mentioned, not just to go over the win total, but to get to 10 wins, this is a great coach with a lot of great pieces. I'm going to put faith in that.
Yeah, and one more thing about Houston and, you know, the quarterback. And I've said it for the past 2 months since we restarted these podcasts, Mike, in the offseason, is this year's the year of the quarterback. Look at Connor Wegman, right? People kind of wrote him off, whatever. 19-7 as a starter. This is from David Hale's piece. Since 2020, the only quarterbacks with 25 or more starts and a better winning percentage to not start at least one playoff game, Jordan Travis, Kyle McCord, and Spencer Sanders. So they have a good quarterback. They have a good coach. They added a piece that is underrated in the portal in Mekhi Hughes. The question is the schedule, right? You got Texas Tech on the road, but I think you made a good point. Even from a, when we see that line come out, maybe it'll be a game of the year line that shows up sooner rather than later. That'll be a good spot to look at Houston as a dog. They're going to go to Kansas State. They're going to go as well on the road to Utah. So the schedule is certainly a bit challenging. So let's get to Kansas State, because this is a team that you also made the pitch on your podcast about them as maybe a long shot to win the Big 12, right around 14 to 1 or so. What jumps out to you? Is this the buy low opportunity on Avery Johnson?
This has to be, because you look at the marriage between head coach and offensive coordinator. Colin Klein comes in from A&M, returns to the Little Apple, where he won seemingly every game when they were an underdog when he was the starting quarterback. He just bulldozed his way in those short yardage situations, goal to go situations, and made their offense, which otherwise would have been kind of a pop gun offense, really dynamic because they always finished off drives. He goes ahead and brings in Sean Gleason, and Duck and I discussed it on our podcast because he focuses so much on FCS football. He was an offensive genius in the Ivy. And a part of that is you get to fly under the radar, you get to tinker, you get to experiment in ways that maybe you wouldn't have as long of a rope at the FBS level. All he did there was create some of the most dynamic, productive offenses in the history of that conference. Then he goes to Oklahoma State because Mike Gundy saw his value, and he turns Chuba Hubbard into a 2,000-yard rusher. Spencer Sanders, fighting through injuries early in his career when he was healthy, he was someone who's really dynamic. So he knows what to do with these dual threat quarterbacks. And Avery Johnson, someone who's flashed, but it just seems like it's almost as though he's been put into a certain position at times to be more of a pocket passer, to be something that he isn't. If he is dynamic and he is running the ball and he is a threat to do so, I think this offense could take a big step forward, and they have a great opportunity to do it with a little bit of home cooking to go with it, because five of their first six games are at Bill Snyder Family Stadium. And when I look through this schedule in the Big 12, they are the lotto winner of the Big 12 scheduling situation, because they have zero unwinnable games. Yes, they're at Arizona State, but we'll see, if their, new quarterback is the right fit to replace really some dynamic offensive play last year in Sam Levitt at times. At TCU, no Texas Tech, no Utah, no BYU. So I think it just comes down to this defense, trying to match the spring in the step for the offense that they're going to have under Gleason, because the defensive line lost a lot. This room does not have many returning snaps. And Jordan Peterson, coming with Klein from Texas A&M, he was someone that really lives and dies by generating havoc and those tackle for loss numbers. They were 22nd, A&M was, in 2024, all the way up to third last year. That was a big reason why they rose really to the top of the polls before kind of fading late in the season. And he did that with some dynamic linebacker play. York and Sanford at linebacker had 16 and a half tackles for loss. I don't necessarily see those sure things in that linebacker room, but I do believe in coaching. And I think this is a league where there's just not a huge talent differential between the absolute top at Texas Tech and kind of the middle class of this league. You have to be lucky in terms of injuries. You're not going to have the same kind of depth that Texas Tech has been able to put together because of all their spending in the transfer portal. But if they stay healthy and a few of these guys pop given the opportunity, I think K-State at 14-1 is a great opportunity to hit it big.
Yeah, you're looking at their win total, 7.5, heavily juiced over, -$1.75. By the way, at DraftKings, I don't necessarily recommend parlays, but if you want to bring it down a little bit, you can parlay a couple win totals if you would like. 8.5 plus 115. It's funny, Mike, the schedule comes out, the game times come out, I should say, on Wednesday of this past week. And, as a bettor, you're thinking, all right, what does this do for me? I will say Kansas State ended up benefiting greatly from this, because Washington State got moved to Sunday. So now the second game of the season for K-State, which will be a noon Eastern, 11 a.m. local kick in the Little Apple, will be against Washington State, who now has an extra less day of prep time. So K-State opens up against an FCS team, and Washington State's playing their arch rival. So if you're looking at their win total, which I know you and Duck talked about in your podcast, the schedule actually benefits them greatly, because not only is it a rivalry game that Washington State is playing in week one. They now are playing that on Sunday as opposed to Saturday. So the schedule works out well for Kansas State, at least in the non-con.
No, that's absolutely true. It's important to think about this in this era where there's also these airline conferences where people's travel really can start to stack up. And also sometimes when it's overblown, whether you have an extra day or two, maybe you play on a Thursday and then the following Saturday, or you start the season on the road. Starting the season, we talk about it every single year with a program like Hawaii. That first road trip is different than a road trip deep in November when you're banged up, when your depth chart is in flux, when you're trying to get those extra practice times, you know, kind of nailed down, coming to the mainland. There's different elements to every single travel piece. And I think early in the season, it really pays to be locked into that because it can be worth a couple points, a kind of hidden value there in those point spreads.
That's a good point, too. And we'll talk about it. I mean, Hawaii week zero goes to Stanford, but as you pointed out, they got plenty of time to go there. And then UNLV will take on Hawaii in that week one game, late night game on the CW. Looking forward to that one as it is a short spread, actually the shortest spread of week one, that and UCLA Cal. Big picture on the Big 12. So you gave us kind of two middle shots there in Houston and Kansas State. What is your feel on this Texas Tech team? Like I said, I opened up the podcast discussing the Red Raiders. I don't know your thoughts on Texas Tech. Right now, around even money to win the Big 12. And once again, we're recording this. You might be listening to this after the injunction news comes out on June 1st. I'm playing in under the likelihood, Mike, that we're not going to see Brendan Sorsby play a down for Texas Tech this year. But what's your make on the Red Raiders this season?
This is the most talented team in the Big 12, and Will Hammond, when he was healthy last year, added a different elements to their offense in terms of the explosiveness with his legs. Now, obviously, coming back from a knee injury 15 years ago, this could have been something that would have changed the trajectory of his career, changed who he was on the field. Forget about just the rehab time, really moving forward. But now we have apples-to-apples comparison from last year. I talked about it leading into the season for James Madison. I figured that Matt Sluka was going to come in and really kind of be the substitute teacher for the month of September. Maybe he wins the job and holds on to it the whole year because Alonzo Barnett was coming back from a serious knee injury. He just came back from the very first game and looked a little bit rusty, a little bit tentative in some of the RPO and read game, you know, being able to plant off that foot. But then after one game, he was just back to who he was in, you know, the 2024 season. Are we going to see something like that from Hammond? What I do know is that when you look at this schedule, it's kind of made for them to survive in advance. An FCS team right off the bat in Abilene, then at Oregon State, a team that's reeling in terms of its roster. That Houston game is going to be challenging, but maybe they can just lean on their defense and win a lower scoring game. Then Sam Houston at Colorado to start October, Arizona State in mid-October. This schedule, I think, is just kind of tailor-made for them to survive and maybe ease him back into the lineup and not necessarily need him to be dynamic and 100%. Really, this is a program now, in short order, that went from happy to win 8 or 9 games, maybe upset a top team every 3 or 4 years, to now they are laser-focused on the college football playoff. They want to be playing their best football in January. So it becomes kind of a load management situation. I know every college football fan in the world cringes at that thought where maybe you're not putting out your full effort or putting all of your starters at risk every single Saturday, you know, living and dying with it. But if they win the Big 12, they can get in with 2 losses. They can certainly be in a nice position in terms of seeding with 1 loss. So we're not in a world where you have to run the table from a so-called weaker conference just to get to a BCS championship game or a 4-team playoff. And I think they're going to be smart about it. Joey McGuire understands what it takes to kind of build around defense. And last year's team was just suffocating in the Big 12. So I think the familiarity that their coordinator, Shiel Wood, has with this entire lineup of conference foes, they're going to be able to survive. And I'm done doubting medical technology. I'm sure that Hammond is going to be able to return and be just as dynamic as he was before, because I think, honestly, if he had been in a quarterback competition in earnest from August, he was a better fit than Morton in this offense. So we'll see if he gets back up to 100%. And if so, you know, forget about my K-State tickets. I can just rip it up at that point. But I still think it opens the door a little bit for some other teams. But Texas Tech is rightfully priced as the big dog here in the Big 12.
All right. Good to hear that we're on the same page with Texas Tech from a talent standpoint. But I do think your point about Houston, Kansas State, especially when those more markets open up, the markets of to make the conference championship become pretty fascinating as well. Let's stay in Texas and let's go to a One of the favorites, not only in the country, but also in their conference, that would be the Texas Longhorns. You know, Arch Manning back for another year. They go big in the portal with Cam Coleman coming in from Auburn. Can they unlock him to become that elite receiver that I think is certainly in there? Week two, one of the biggest games of the whole regular season. They will host Ohio State in primetime. But, Mike, that has nothing to do with their future to win the SEC. Plus 310 right now at DraftKings, so roughly in that ballpark. What do you make of the Longhorns, and is this a team you're backing to win the SEC?
Oh, I love this team. And by the way, no UGA on the schedule because Kirby has owned Sark in three straight meetings. So that was a nice plus right off the bat. Then you look at the quarterback situation. I understand that Arch was under the microscope. He did not look good early in the season last year. He was out of his element in that opener against Ohio State. All the sim pressures, all, you know, the hybrid coverages. He didn't know what he was looking at downfield, but he really turned it on late. You know, last three games, 11 total touchdowns, just one turnover-worthy play per PFF. That's not just the physical attributes. That's everything clicking mentally for him. He's able to process at a much faster rate. They upset A&M. They dominate Michigan in the bowl game. I think that's where this team is going. And you mentioned what they did in the portal per 24/7 Sports. Third ranks class, 10 blue chippers joining the burnt orange. Cam Coleman, but also Hollywood Smothers, yep. Relique Brown, Melvin Ciani at right tackle. They beefed up on the lines in the trenches to go along with some of that offensive, you know, skill position talent on the perimeter. The other addition that I really like is Will Muschamp, because this was a defense that at times played bend but not break. You know, we're not going to give up the big play. He's in the opposite direction. He's going to be far more aggressive. This goes back to the old Don Brown, Dr. Blitz thing. Solve your problems with aggression. He's going to do that. And one thing that he has, you know, at his disposal right away is Colin Simmons. And what he does is he goes and puts together load fronts, which essentially is putting some of his best pass rushers and heaviest dudes on one side of the ball to create one-on-one situations for Simmons on the other one. I think this kid is going to blast off. He's going to be in the major award conversation. He's going to have All-American buzz. And then behind him, by the way, if they want to double him, they got Rasheem Biles from Pitt, a guy who's flown a little bit under the radar because of all the money that they spent on the offensive weaponry. This guy was everywhere for the Panthers last year. Not physically imposing, but someone just always is at the football. In the games that he played and finished, he averaged over 10 tackles per game, 17 tackles for loss, two pick sixes, two forced fumbles, a fumble recovery. He's a missile. I think he's a perfect, you know, addition to this defense and what Will Muschamp wants to do. And you talked about Ohio State. When you look at the rest of the schedule, as I mentioned, no Georgia at Tennessee. I think they can get it done there. Obviously, you know, Red River against OU and Dallas, that's going to be a tough game, but certainly not one that they're going to be out of their depth in terms of talent. At LSU, at A&M, we'll see how those teams, you know, rebound, or in the case of LSU, rebuild from scratch with Lane Kiffin. I think this team has the playmakers to run the table. I don't necessarily think they will. Once again, it's kind of a situation like Texas Tech. I care less about how they play against Ohio State. I care more how they're playing in December for the SEC title. And to get them at north of 3-1, I think it'll probably close with them as a favorite in that SEC championship game. So I don't mind tying up my money for, at this point, 5 months.
I mean, it just, it breaks my heart, you know, to see some coach like Pat Narduzzi to lose a Rasheem Biles and Francis Brew. It just, it tears me up inside, man. It's never, the Nard dope, I'm sure he'll have some fine words about complaining about that one of these days. But speaking of the ACC and the conference that the Nard dope is a part of, let's get to a couple teams that you like here. And let's start with Virginia Tech. You know, this is a team, you know, it's funny. And I think you alluded to it. I think I've talked about it here. You know, James Franklin, it feel like it ran its course at Penn State, and Penn State fans weren't happy to get over, to not get over the top, right? But then you look at the success and the sustainability that they had, Mike, and it's like Virginia Tech would crawl over glass and fire to get back to 9 and 10 wins every single year, and to get that Lane Stadium, Enter Sandman really bumping on a Saturday night or a Friday night, whatever it may be. So Franklin comes in. Virginia Tech's win total, 6.5, $1.50 to the over. If you want to get a little risky, which I know you like to do from time to time, 7.5 plus 170 to the over. You like what James Franklin is selling down there in Blacksburg.
I absolutely love it because people have forgotten this guy's a turnaround specialist. That's what's on his CV. You know, when he came into Vandy, they were 4-20 straight up in the two seasons before he arrived, completely devoid of talent to compete in the SEC. All he did was turn them around in short order. He leads them to three straight bowl games, a record of 24-15. And I think there's just an edge to this guy at this point. He's on a revenge tour. It began on the recruiting path because he raided his former employer. He brings in four-star quarterback recruit Ethan Grunkmeyer, who looked really good at times down the stretch for Penn State in a chaotic situation. It would have been easy for that Penn State offense to just give up. You saw how he looked in the second half of that bowl game against Clemson, making big throw after big throw. He also brings in Luke Reynolds going down to Blacksburg, that tight end. And the talent infusion at the high school level, too, gives them depth. They finished with a top 30 class, 27th per 24/7 Sports, the program's first top 30 class since 2019. So I look at that, the talent, the belief, the buzz. Lane Stadium is going to be absolutely rocking, and they have a manageable opening month to get some momentum and some belief inside that locker room. They get VMI, they get Old Dominion, who I think is actually a perfect opponent because it's a good Sun Belt team that I expect to go bowling this year, but not one that they can't beat on their home field. And then a trip to downtrodden Maryland, you know, that could produce a 3-0 start, and then all of a sudden, you know, grabbing him at plus money to go over 7.5 and, you know, plus 170, that's starting to look really good. When I look at some other games later in the season, they got a nationally televised Friday night home game against Pitt. They got SMU off of a bye. SMU, by the way, always be thinking about the schedule, where it lands. They're coming off a short week after flying up to Syracuse to play the week before. So a lot of things are working in their favor. You can make the argument that they're probably going to be drawing dead at Clemson and at Miami, and that's fine. I don't need them to even have a puncher's chance in the fourth quarter of either of those games to get to 8 wins here. So can they go 8-2 in those other 10? I think absolutely. And a big part of it is Grunkmeyer. I just think that the guy stands and delivers. He seems to be someone who is like a game manager plus, and I think that's exactly the kind of quarterback that is needed in a situation like this. I think he's someone who knows how to feed his tight ends, knows how to check down to his running backs effectively and kind of manipulate the pocket. We don't need this guy to be a savior. We don't need him to be a dual threat savant. I think he's going to be just enough to get them to 8 wins, and I want to be paid for it. So I'm going to bump up a little bit in terms of the win market and go for that plus 170.
Yeah, that week 3 game is a sneaky good one. It's going to be a night game at Maryland. Maybe the fans will actually show up for that one. It's early on in the season, so they might not have completely quit on Maryland at that point. But once upon a time, James Franklin, when he was on the staff with Ralph Regent, was the coach in waiting. And when he was at Penn State, he always enjoyed beating Maryland. So that'll be a pretty good one. Decent storylines week 3, certainly with Mike Locksley being on the hot seat. This will kind of tie into week 1, but also big picture, and that's Louisville. This is a team that a couple of years ago, many of us in this gambling space said, look at Louisville's schedule. This team can absolutely make a run to the ACC championship, and lo and behold, they did. They fell short to Florida State, but you had a big number to get off of heading into that championship game, and they've got an unknown at quarterback, and it's kind of become, Mike, a talking point here on the pod the past couple of weeks, because we had Bobby Carpenter on to talk Ohio State, but he certainly knows Lincoln Kienholz well. And then, you know, we had David Hale on yesterday. He was pretty intrigued by him. Look, you've got a great quarterback guru in Jeff Brohm, an elite athlete in Kienholz. So what do we make of this Louisville team? Before we look at week 1, let's look big picture on the Cardinals in 2026.
So rarely do you punt on a quarterback situation, or you say that it doesn't necessarily matter as much as the market may think. He's someone who hasn't logged many reps, you know, because of the quarterback room and also because of injuries, and he has all the talent in the world. But I start this whole process looking at the fact that they have arguably the best offensive player and best defensive player. At least they're going to buy for those honors in the ACC. Isaac Brown, when he's healthy, is Mr. Big Play. He has one of the highest breakaway percentages in the sport, which essentially means he gets the majority of his yards on those 15, 20, 25-yard runs. So he's someone who is able to give an offense that maybe needs to have the training wheels on it early due to, you know, quarterback reps. He gives them that explosiveness right away. And then you look at Lubin on the other side of the ball, someone who could go for 15, 20 tackles for loss. He's a game wrecker. He's a game plan wrecker for opposing offensive coordinators. So right away, I view what they bring to the table from a skill position star quality element. I'm really impressed with what I see. And this coach, you have to back him in these situations. He's one of the most profitable Power Four coaches as an underdog, you know, dating back to his time at Purdue in the entire country. Yet for whatever reason, I think he still flies under the national radar. And this was a team that handed, you know, the Miami Hurricanes a loss last year. How did we all feel as a collective college football universe about the Canes by the end of the season? They also beat JMU, a team that, you know, goes to the college football playoff as well. This is a spot where I think the quarterback is the emphasis and the spotlight that we're putting on it may be a little bit overblown, because if he can be Miller Moss plus or in the same category, they're going to be in every single game in ACC play. And when you start looking at the pricing, which this is always a reminder to the audience, shop around, you can get, you know, 8-1 instead of a 5-1. Like, the prices start to pop and start to really surprise you when you look between, because a lot of these books will hang stale numbers and they don't necessarily care because they're just not getting the volume. Go ahead and take advantage. Pick up that money laying on the sidewalk, because this is an opportunity with a team that, if the quarterback does work, and this is a guy who got recruited by Ryan Day, he's brought in, you know, he lost to really good quarterbacks in terms of the battle and not getting on the field. It's not because he's a bum. It's because there's just only one spot and one football in Columbus. So to be able to scoop up a kid like him in a year when some players were like, the fact that Sorsby got as much money as he did from Texas Tech before the scandal broke, I think just spoke to the inflation in the quarterback market. If you put up decent numbers at a Power Four school, people were backing up the Brinks truck. I think the undervalued guys are the 4 and 5 stars that have been waiting, biding their time, looking for an opportunity. And I think Louisville, at the end of this season, we may look back and say this is one of the best quarterback transfers in this cycle. So if he hits, I think they're going to win the ACC. If he doesn't, I still think they have the skill position talent and the superstars on both sides of the ball to be competitive with the Canes and if Clemson ever gets their act together.
You know, you got week one on a Sunday night in Nashville as a dog. Jeff Brohm, as you alluded to, and we've talked about since this podcast has come into an existence, because Matt Eumanns is a Purdue guy and he knows how well Jeff Brohm fares as an underdog. That's the spot. And then week three, you know, what's that line going to be at home against SMU? You know, you talk about SMU start to the season where you get Florida State on a Monday night and then that week three game on the road. You're going to learn a lot about SMU early. I think you're going to learn a lot about Louisville. So let's get to that week one game. I know you've got the better of the number. So we can, I would say to the audience, because I have not bet it yet, that is a spot that I really want to grab the dog. Maybe we get a Rogue 7 at some point. We still have some time. I think there's going to be a lot of hype. And we're going to talk about Trinidad Shambles here in a moment, Mike. But to me, Jeff Brohm, underdog, all this hype on Ole Miss, rightfully so, after the run to the semifinals and how Lane Kiffin left and Trinidad Chambliss coming back. If we're able to catch a touchdown with Louisville, right now 6.5, this is a pretty intriguing spot, and I think you like the Cardinals as well.
I absolutely like them. As I mentioned, I grabbed them at 7.5. I think this could bubble back up because you're going to see the Heisman hype train really hit its groove in August and some casual money come in. Just looking at Chambliss and saying, you know, he basically willed them to the verge of their first national championship, you know, stakes bowl game since the early 60s. This guy is Michael Vick incarnate. He can do no wrong. Well, Weiss is gone. His play caller follows Kiffin down to Baton Rouge. You got John David Baker taking over play calling duties with an entirely green receiving core. I think there's a high likelihood that you could see a little bit of a rusty first quarter, maybe a couple 3 and outs, punt the football. And then at that point, does Chambliss start to press? Because someone with his talent, he's someone who thinks he can make every play. And most of the time he does, but also there's elements of him putting the ball in harm's way. So I think there's an opportunity for the market to overcorrect a little bit based on the recency of what Ole Miss did in their college football playoff run. The defense as well, I think there's going to be some questions how they're going to be able to hold up because they lost some key elements. They just were outbid in the transfer portal. Some new faces there. This Ole Miss team, I think, is a bit overrated. And at this point in the season, with very little tape on, you know, the quarterback play that they're going to face, there's a wide range of outcomes, including Louisville winning this one outright. I'm going to wait to be able to give it out officially in the Action app. I'm waiting for it to get back above 7, or at least I'd pay, you know, -135 to punch it above a touchdown. Right now, it's settling into that 6.5-7 point spread. I think that's fair, but as soon as you get the hook over that touchdown, I think it's worth a bet in that spot.
Yeah, I'm going to be waiting, and certainly if that 7 shows up as we start to see more sports books put out lines, that'll be a spot, no doubt, for me as well. But let's stick with Trinidad Chambliss. We had Paul Stone, our good friend, on a couple weeks ago and said he loves Trinidad Chambliss at 14-1 to win the Heisman. And we were talking to David Hale earlier this week. He has Trinidad Chambliss amongst his premier quarterbacks. And I agree. I think pound for pound college football, Mike, I think he's the best player, best quarterback, I should say, coming into this year. I have him, you know, a bit ahead of Arch Manning, not as a pro prospect, but as a college football player. So he's 14-1. I think that's the highest I saw here in Vegas to win the Heisman. 11-12-1. Look around. You can get a little bit better. But, you know, I'm curious your breakdown of Trinidad Chambliss, because you do have that week one game, which you and I think it could be a little bit squirrely for this Ole Miss team. So do you wait? Do you see if you can get a little bit better number? Because history will tell us, Mike, and you do a great job of this as well. Jaden Daniels, when LSU lost to Florida State week one, dropped to 40-1. Now, I don't think we'll get that with Trinidad Chambliss, but do you put like half a position on Chambliss now, and then maybe Louisville pulls the upset and maybe you get a 20-1 or something like that on Chambliss?
Yeah, I think it would probably take two losses, you know, before October 1st for those numbers to really pop and get into that those Daniel neighborhoods where it's, you know, 35-40-1. I kind of start with this, which is there used to be the thinking that it was the best player on the best team or essentially a team that was going to make the 4-team college football playoff. But now that we're in this 12-team era, everything has changed, and you can see it in the last two races. Travis Hunter and Jensie 1-2 in 2024. You know, neither of them were top eight at any point in the season. Then you got Diego Pavia being a runner-up. You got Love there. They're in the 2 and 3 slot of last year's voting. Neither one of them went to the playoff. So I think it's reframed and loosened up the voting base for the Heisman Trophy, where they're truly now just giving it to the most dynamic player and the best player who has the combination of stats and the Heisman moments. And when I look at the scheduling balance that Chambliss is going to enjoy this season, he's going to have at least 5 games against ranked opponents. 2 against dregs for stat padding in Charlotte and Wofford, which is useful. And then 5 other games that could morph into ranked opportunities. You know, he's going to the Swamp to play the Gators. He's at Vandy, home against Mizzou, home against Auburn, home against Mississippi State. I wouldn't be shocked if any of those teams end up at some point in the season ranked in the top 25. And that's the kind of stuff that gives, you know, validity to what he's accomplishing. It's not just empty calories in terms of the stats and the points. It's him doing it and helping Ole Miss climb the national AP poll. And then there's the highlight reel stuff, which we know that we're going to get. We saw it time and time again during the college football playoff run. Being a pass run threat, he can just do things that other quarterbacks, maybe a CJ Carr, can't necessarily do physically. He's got the great story. And I bring up Carr for a reason, which is he's going to be overshadowed a bit by having a excellent top 10 national defense. So at times there's going to be pressure on him to convert on those key third downs, to score, you know, maybe win a game by a single possession or 10 points. But I think in the back of everyone's mind a little bit, for, by the way, Carr second in the preseason Heisman odds, that they're going to say to themselves, yeah, he did it, but you know, who could we plug into this Notre Dame offense and still win 10 or 11 games this year? That is not the case with Ole Miss and Chambliss. This was a roster last year that per 24/7 was 21st in composite talent. I think they're going to take an even further step back, maybe be borderline top 30. So everyone's going to know. They're going to have the stats. They're going to have the information. This is a one-man team. He's playing hero ball. He's the best player. Oh, and by the way, there's going to be one of the most dynamic races to be the number one pick in the NFL draft. So they're going to be comparing quarterbacks constantly throughout the season. So I think there's an opportunity for him to do things physically and put things on tape that these other quarterbacks can't.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned CJ Carr, because I know this is something you and Duck discussed in your podcast, and you had some good points. I agree overall that CJ Carr is overvalued in the Heisman market. I would not bet him at plus 750. I do have a little bit of pushback of your thoughts on the Irish. So I want to let the floor be yours on Notre Dame. Week one, they're playing Wisconsin at Lambeau. They're laying 19.5 or 20.5. You're interested in Wisconsin in that one. I know you, as someone who knows the G5 as well as anybody, can talk more about Colton Joseph and what he can potentially bring to this Wisconsin offense as he comes in from Old Dominion. So week one, Notre Dame, big favorite against Wisconsin. Full season, CJ Carr, the floor is yours on the Irish.
Well, let's start with CJ Carr. And maybe this is, you know, having grown up in the state of Pennsylvania, where for whatever reason, there's a lot of Irish Catholic fans. So in the 90s, it was either people were rooting for Penn State or they're rooting for Notre Dame. And I went through the Notre Dame hype machine every single fall, it seemed like, leading into the season. And a lot of it came down to the overall talent, but just the jerseys, the name brand, Lou Holtz. You know, they bring in Paulus, who was a quarterback from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. He was not going to win just one, but two Heisman trophies, according to Beano Cook. I think that the hype train is getting Paulus-like for CJ Carr at this point. The guy is fine. He was game manager plus, and that's exactly what he needed to be last year, by the way, because he was handing the ball to a generational running back who just went third in the NFL draft after going for over 1,600 total yards, 21 touchdowns in just 12 games. Love was an absolute dog. But this year, I think there's a chance from a personnel perspective that their defense is just so good that he's either getting pulled in the fourth quarters of games, so he's not going to be there statistically, or it's just going to be clear that if he can avoid mistakes, they're going to win, and that's going to be enough. And that was the case a little bit down the stretch last year. I know that everybody was banging the drum that Notre Dame deserved to be in the college football playoff. And honestly, if I was on the committee, I would have put them in. I think they would have gone on a deep run, and they certainly had the momentum and the talent to win the national championship. But when you look at who they did, they were thumping teams with, you know, backup, secondary, third, walk-on quarterback options. Boston College, Grayson James. Navy with their backup quarterback, Braxton Woodson. Pitt with a true freshman. Freshman walk-on Joe Filardi for Syracuse in his second career start. And then Elijah Brown from Stanford in his fourth career start as a redshirt freshman. So I think it's a little bit overblown that they were blowing the doors off these teams. That's what I expected them to do. And also, they had every motivation in the world to try to impress the committee. I think we put a little too many eggs in that basket saying, well, of course, they would have gone to the college football playoff and done exactly what Miami did. Perhaps. All I know for sure is what Miami actually did. And I think Carr this year is just going to be a tax. It's going to be inflation on this team and then certainly on his odds. So as it relates to that opening weekend at Lambeau, it's going to be an absolute zoo. 77,000 drunk Wisconsinites just really hoping that this one win can put them back on the national radar after being 4-8 last season. But they were very competitive in the last month of the season. They upset nationally ranked Illinois. And Colton Joseph comes in. He's one of the rare quarterbacks who can go for over 2,500 passing yards and 1,000 rushing yards, no problem. The guy is absolutely huge. He can take a pounding. It's not just someone who's going to scramble and look to get out of bounds. He can get those, you know, difficult yards, third and fourth and short. And then in the red zone, it gives them an extra element in their run game. Offensively, they couldn't have been worse at the quarterback position last year. And I think that is, unfortunately, depending on how you view this, that's dragging down the projection coming into this game and getting closer to that 3-touchdown threshold. Keep in mind, we have to go back about 10 years. LSU is number 5 in the country. They come to Lambeau against a Wisconsin team that was going to be well-coached, but they were going to crush them. And they lose that game outright, 16-14, in what became a slog. Brandon Harris throws multiple interceptions. I don't think Wisconsin's going to nip Notre Dame outright, but I think you're going to get their absolute best effort. They're going to have all kinds of new wrinkles. If anything goes to plan, they're going to use Kojo the way that he was used at ODU, which is spread the field out, go 4 and 5 wides, give an opportunity where you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you blitz and you don't get home on him, he's going to be able to pop 15, 20 yard runs. And if you just sit back, he's someone who can buy enough time for his receivers to find some, you know, empty space in this Notre Dame secondary. So I'm already locking it in at 20.5. I think there's a chance, just like we talked about, you know, with Chambliss, with the casual money comes in, people get excited. There's going to be excitement about this Notre Dame team because they're going to be mentioned in every single conversation to win the national championship. I think this gets to 21 points. So you may be best served holding off until closer to kickoff.
I'm not going to lay the points, no doubt. You know, I will say, I think what gets brought up a lot, and you brought it up on your pod, I think it's a fair thing to mention. You know, they have had these clunkers, whether it was Northern Illinois, whether it was Stanford in year one under Marcus Freeman, whether it was Marshall. They still are the best cover team in college football since Marcus Freeman has become the head coach. So I think there's going to be an added element of motivation. I'm not in the world of playing 21 points against a power team. It is worth noting it's a Notre Dame home game, so they'll actually have more fans. I think it's 50-50 split is what I've been understanding. I went to the game at Soldier Field in 2021. Notre Dame scored some late touchdowns, a couple pick six, a kickoff return. So that score was not an indicator. They actually were losing going into the fourth quarter 13-10 and won 41-13. It was kind of an anomaly. But I think big picture, Mike, and I'm curious your thoughts. You alluded to it. I agree with you. I think CJ Carr is overvalued. I will not be betting him to win the Heisman Trophy at plus 750. I will at some point bet Notre Dame to win the title. I don't know when. Maybe it's during the season. Maybe it's right before the season. I think, as you mentioned it, the defense to me is the difference. I think they have the best secondary in the country. They added to it with DJ McKinney coming in from Colorado. Leonard Moore, for me, is probably the best defensive player in college football this year. The linebacker core is loaded. They went to the portal. They got Teon Gray, a huge body defensive lineman from Oregon, Francis Brew. More of the shorter stature guy, but really productive at Pitt. So I think something that you brought up on your pod was Chris Ash. And I was with everybody. I was ready to kick him out, pack his bags, and tell him to go back to wherever he came from. I think they've figured things out. I think the defense rues the day. I'm not telling people to bet over 11.5 on their win total. Everything's juiced up with Notre Dame this year. But I would say this, Mike, and you mentioned it going back to the 90s, pre-Ron Paulus, I think this is the most talented team, pound for pound, Notre Dame has had, even with Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price going to the pros. I think depth on this team is something that we haven't seen since the Holtz era in South Bend.
I'm glad that you framed it the way that you just did, because I still think this Notre Dame team will beat the brakes off the teams they should beat. And it really comes down to a three-game season, BYU, Miami, and SMU. And when you look at the trip to Provo, they have to play six straight games and then make that long road trip. So I think that's going to be difficult. I'm assuming it's going to be a night game. It's going to be an absolute zoo. And I think it'll go a long way in showing the kind of mettle and resolve that they have as a team. But also later in the season, you know, drawing Miami at home, it's going to have as much buzz as Catholics versus Convicts in 88. But that's going to be some really good quarterback play if Mensa is healthy and is really settled in. And then SMU, by the way, you know, later that month against Jennings, who's won a ton of football games. Those are the games that I'm interested in seeing if the Notre Dame tax carries over. I want them to blow out teams. I want them to be covering by 24 points against the Little Sisters of the Poor. That's great. It's going to bake in maybe an extra field goal worth of value for me in some of these bigger spots. And I do think it's worth, you know, picking your spot to go for a money line upset, because I just don't think that they're going to run the table because of the track record of kind of stubbing their toe or not being locked in and focused. And also offensively, there's still a little bit of a mystery in terms of the run pass mix and how aggressive they are with Carr. Do they really let him continue to grow as not just a passer, but a leader of this offense, someone who is emboldened to check out a runs, you know, when they're protecting a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter and saying, no, we're going for the kill shot. We're going for the throat here. We'll see. I mean, this is a team defensively that I'd argue probably one of three or four best defenses in the entire country. So do you play not to lose, or do you play to win and potentially put yourself at risk? We'll see what that ends up being. I think Freeman, as a defensive mind and defensive coach, has kind of leaned a little bit more to that conservative style at times, and it's bit them. But we're going to learn a lot from that midseason road trip to BYU, because that's an opportunity for them on a national stage to challenge themselves. Because even if they finish the season undefeated and they're one or two in the college football playoff, you still got to beat three really good teams to win the national title. So sometimes you can get, you know, a little bit complacent, fatten yourself up on some of those cupcakes, and you don't quite have the edge that you need come January.
Yeah, I think I do think the snub, if you will, from last year, I certainly think that is the motivating factor. Marcus Freeman, he's been doing the rounds this offseason. It's leave no doubt, we left doubt. So you're going to see that kill shot mentality. I agree with you. I'm not shortchanging the Miami game. Like, the Miami game, I think, is going to be the biggest game on that campus in over 20 years. In my opinion, I was at the game against Ohio State in 23. Awesome atmosphere. They came up short. The COVID game against Clemson, obviously, was kind of a unique circumstance. Mike, I think this is, and this is, you know, someone who loves college football history, I think this has the potential to have as much buzz as 05 against USC. If Notre Dame's undefeated, if Miami's undefeated, everything with last year, Catholics versus Convicts, thinking back to 1988. So October 17th against BYU is the game, man. On the road, Provo. Curious what those game of the year lines will be. None are out yet. If it's double digits, I agree with you. I'd look at BYU to take the points, because I heard one beat reporter talking about it. I alluded to it on the pod a couple weeks ago when we were talking about situational spots. This is going to be the biggest game in Provo in two decades plus. I mean, this game is going to be massive. Notre Dame's going to be top 3 in the country. They're going to be undefeated. And the atmosphere, as we've all seen, can be unmatched in Provo. So keep this in mind, Mike. I want to throw this to you. Someone who likes situational spots like I do, the week after BYU plays Notre Dame, they go to Central Florida. So circle that one. That is going to be a weird spot for the Cougs to travel to Orlando after playing Notre Dame in what will almost undoubtedly be a primetime game in Provo.
I like to shrink down the focus for situational spots like that. How about a nice little first quarter plus the points at the bounce house for the Knights? I don't want to necessarily be sweating, you know, the second half when Notre Dame realizes that they're actually in a fight and then they go on that run, 3 touchdowns, 4 touchdowns, win going away. But I agree. It served me well over the years in college basketball as well. You know, those teams that come in fat and happy, they're coming off a big win where they've solidified their position, you know, in the potential bracket. And if we don't play all that hard in the first 20 minutes, that's fine. Situationally, don't be afraid to take a first quarter or first half, you know, spread play.
All right, let's wrap with a couple quick hitters. Let's just look big picture. We talked some Texas Tech. We talked some Texas, Notre Dame now. Where are you at on the three big boys in the Big Ten? Oregon, Ohio State, and Indiana. With the market a little higher, a little lower. Curious your thoughts on the three big boys in the Big Ten.
I think Oregon has the roster to do whatever they want in the majority of the games this season. I'm not a big Dante Moore believer in terms of him winning the Heisman and being the top pick in the NFL draft. He doesn't need to be. This is now a system offense where if he protects the football, which he struggled a bit at times, you know, against Indiana in those two meetings, if he just cleans that up, they have the defense, they have the bodies in, you know, the trenches on both sides of the ball to just overwhelm teams. You know, as it relates to Indiana, Hoover's turnovers really do concern me. It's something that I'm a big believer in it being just like accuracy. It's a difficult thing to teach. Either you have that accuracy by the time you're at the college level, or in the case of, you know, turnover avoidance, you just have the right risk reward mentality in your brain, when to force the football, when to throw it away, when to take the check down. Now, Cignetti is a phenomenal coach. He's one of the most prepared game planners in the sport. He obviously pulled the best football out of Fernando Mendoza. Can he do it again? I just need to see it a little bit. Do I think all of a sudden they're going to crater and be a 7-5 team? No, absolutely not. But I think it's still reasonable when they're mentioned in, you know, the conversation to repeat as national champions. I'm not there because of what I saw from Hoover. He's somebody who could put up huge yards, but in a lot of cases, some of it, as I mentioned earlier, empty calories, passing in games where they needed to throw to come back. So we'll see if he can be surgical, because when I think of the best of Mendoza last year, like that Penn State game, he needed to make critical throws in tight windows down the stretch to win that game and to pull them out of the fire. I need to see that first from Hoover. And then Ohio State, I'm bullish on this team if they can get to a point offensively. And I'll use a cross sports analogy here. Growing up in Pennsylvania, they could never shut up about Villanova winning the 85 national championship. If you go back and watch that game, it makes no sense that Georgetown, with all the physical advantages, with Patrick Ewing at center, didn't play faster. They allowed Villanova to slow the game down. And at times, you know, basically without, you know, the shot clock and everything else, shrink down the possessions and get into a spot where they could lose by a single possession if another team got hot. Ohio State, in a similar fashion, slowed the game way down last year. I mean, they were right in the conversation with service academies in terms of seconds between plays. You have the best players. I mean, you can make the argument. You certainly have the best wide receiver in college football. Hurry up, get to the line. I want to see what this offense can do with 10 extra plays. Like, that's the come to Jesus moment for Ryan Day, where it's like, stop coaching not to lose and start coaching to win, because every single season you've been there, you've had a top five roster. And this team this year, particularly what they have in the backfield, what they have with Smith, they should be going faster. That's what I need to see. For Indiana, it's Hoover in those critical moments. For Ohio State, I want to see the play calling mix, and I want to see the urgency and even just sprinkling in tempo at times, because I do think you can catch teams unaware. They just get used to having the full, you know, play clock to be able to mix and match defensive personnel, speed it up a little bit. And you saw it 2 years ago with Chip Kelly. They were a different offense in the college football playoff than they were in the regular season.
Yep.
Caught teams unaware, and all of a sudden, you know, they lose to Oregon in Eugene, and then they meet up again with them in the Rose Bowl and just crush them. They didn't even deserve to be on the same field. That was because of an offensive identity change. So it's all there. We'll see if Ryan Day pushes the right buttons.
Final one for you, Mike. Let's get a long shot for the people. Last year, Lenora Sellers was 14-1 preseason to win the Heisman Trophy. He had all this preseason hype. And I think that's one of the fascinating dynamics of this college football season. You already alluded to an Avery Johnson. Hell, even a John Mateer. Think about all the love that he got. And I was critical saying, are we sure he's going to be this good? And then he ends up getting a thumb injury and it kind of derails the season. Lenora Sellers was a guy that, you know, we were trying to find those quarterbacks. Now we know those quarterbacks, and it feels like he's just kind of out of sight, out of mind. You can find him at the Westgate Superbook at 50-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. Preseason 14-1 last year, Mike. So are you buying low on Lenora Sellers?
I'm absolutely buying low, but I want to kind of walk through why he's priced this way.
Yep.
Last year was an unmitigated disaster. They couldn't block. They were 102nd in pass blocking, 120th in run blocking per PFF. He was sacked 42 times, and that cratered his accuracy. You could see he had happy feet in the situations where he did have time in the pocket. Everything was off in terms of his timing, and it also cut into his running as well because he was taking such a pounding that he just didn't have the same stamina and wherewithal to just lower his shoulder and run through people. But we saw him do that. In 2024, he flashed greatness. You know, he upset Clemson in the Palmetto Bowl, throws 5 touchdowns against a nationally ranked Mizzou team, 350 total yards in an upset at number 10 Texas A&M. But now he's down to 12-12 overall as a starter. And while, yes, people always say in the NFL, wins and losses, it's not a quarterback stat. In college, Heisman voters will absolutely use that against you. So you need to win yourself some games. So what changed this year? Yes, they went into the portal and they got like 6 or 7 new offensive linemen that they can, you know, plug and play and kind of move around. We'll put that aside for a moment. The real acquisition of the offseason was bringing in Kendall Briles as the offensive coordinator and play caller, because everywhere he's gone, he's done more with less. I mean, you look at it at Baylor, a combination of Seth Russell and Jared Stidham, 49 total touchdowns in 2015. He goes to Houston. Derek King, who's undersized for the position, explodes for 50 total touchdowns. And just like, you know, with King, Briles is on this like bleeding edge of the RPO movement, the exploration, really pushing it to its limits with every single element that you can add to it. He's going to continue to do that and create a pick your poison scenario with Sellers. And the beauty of using so much RPO and quick game is that it mitigates a crappy offensive line because you're getting the ball out of your hands. So I view this as a guy who's done it with KJ Jefferson at Arkansas. He did it with Hoover at TCU. You can really easily envision 40, 45 total touchdowns, 4,000 plus total yards. And the scheduling, just like I get into it with Chambliss going through it, the stat padding opportunities are there. Kent State, Towson, Mississippi State, and then probably 5 to 7 or 8 Heisman moments against ranked opponents throughout the SEC schedule. I view this as, you know, the offensive line needs to click. He's got Nick Harbor, who's taken baby step by baby step. I think he's ready to be an all-SEC caliber wide receiver. If he does that, I think Sellers will generate enough buzz, get to 8 or 9 wins, and if he does so, he'll be in New York. And at 40-1, you can never have enough of those tickets for candidates just to make it to New York City. I think he has all the talent in the world. And a part of it, just like it goes against an Arch Manning at times, a CJ Carr because of the great teammates around him, it's kind of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air where he's staying, still looking around the living room and it's empty. There's no more all-SEC guys. This isn't Steve Spurrier in 2011 recruiting his butt off. It's Sellers getting it done. And if he does, he'll get all the credit. And I think you'll be in a really nice position with a 40-1 ticket.
He is Mike Calabrese. Follow him on Twitter at EastBreeze. Check him out, the Big Bets on Campus podcast, Action Network, New York Post, always giving out a play. Mike, this was awesome, man. Appreciate, once again, the suggestion by Kevin to have you on because I just completely whiffed on it. I overlooked it. This was great, and much appreciated, man.
Thanks for having me.
There he is. Mike Calabrese, that's going to do it for the podcast. Continue to rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks to Wyatt and Ryan, my producer. I'm Tim Murray. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.